The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
Every club has now had the chance to have a breather, but John Worsfold and Alan Richardson won't feel rested with the pressure mounting on the two coaches. But off the field, their two clubs headline one of the more extraordinary trade stories of the year. A story broken by one of our own on the Fox Footy podcast, who upon discovering the information was like a pig in mud. We'll dissect all that and much more on this week's edition of the Fox Footy podcast. Ben Waterworth with you, as is Dermot Burton's whipping boy, Max Lawton. Hello, Maxie.
Yeah, so I'm apparently a pinhead based on the Saturday Stretch comments every week. You may hear a slightly different sort of podcast this week, listeners. The SEN studios on Friday morning had a bit of a fire-related issue, which Kane Corns and Tex Walker had some fun with online, and that has resulted in us being here in the different Fox Footy podcast bunker.
Yes, we're going back old school here in the Fox Footy podcast, but also joining us is aspiring Dakar Rally driver Tom Morris.
Why? Oh, Ben, I was about to ask, why are you calling me that? No, that was a bad Saturday at Elstonwick Park.
So we did flag on Twitter that we would dissect this forensically on the Fox Footy podcast. You're out at a VAFA game.
I was doing a function for the Olmore Burnians, my local club.
Just cashy, you know?
No, for free.
Oh, wow.
Max. I was there at the Goodness of Lionheart, which I'm happy to do for the Olmore Burnians. And they were playing Old Kerry and won by a lot in the end. So that was a good part of the day. But
thanks,
I was doing it with Amit Baines, the Western Bulldogs CEO, who's also been part of the club. And I parked in a bog, which was my fault.
Yes.
I was actually going to crash into the back of the goal. But I mean, who parks behind the goals anyway? That's stupid as well at local footy.
Now, what type of car do you drive, Tom?
A Toyota Corolla.
And it's front wheel drive?
I don't know. It was a front wheel drive.
I believe that's an issue. I don't drive, and I know that was part of the issue.
I couldn't care less about cars. Like, I will drive whatever I have, and I'll drive that car until I get a better car. Anyway, and then I was in a bog, and I didn't know this, gentleman, but you can actually go and get a big truck to come and get you out of a bog. It's not just a yellow RACV car. This was a big truck that turned up.
A big truck.
And while the truck was there, I went to collect it to come in, and as I came back to the car, another car, a Mercedes, which is typical Olmo Burnians, crashed into the back of my car. And I didn't realise that. And I got back, and I didn't know this either, but that meant it was now an accident scene. So the RACV couldn't actually touch my car. I had to make a claim.
Excellent.
So the RACV guy did a U-turn and went out. I went up to the function. I told the story. Everyone was laughing at me. And then turns out one of the guys in the function was a good fella named Campbell Dixon.
Yes.
Good country fella. And he had a big four-wheel drive and a rope, and he tugged me out. But there's a big dent in the back left of my car.
Well,
then it was on the couch last night, and now I'm the laughing stock for two reasons. One, because I parked in a bog behind the goals at a footy game.
Mm.
And two, because I drive a car that should be for my sister.
Well, your mum's car. That's as Jerry
Neely
said.
It actually was my mum's car.
Yeah, factually correct.
So I don't care. It doesn't bother me at all. I'd rather go to Wimbledon or the Ashes or the Major League Baseball than buy a new car.
It's good that you're being thrifty. It's just smart work.
Yeah, so I need to call RSEV and sort it out.
I do have to admit, though, I know exactly how Tom feels, because when I was working at the Eastern Football League, I had a very similar experience at beautiful Moorabark Maxi, which you would know very, very well. Got bogged down there. I didn't have to have a truck or someone pull me out. I luckily had three very loyal volunteers push me out from the mud. But it is something that people going to the local footy in some way, shape or form have experienced over the years, Thomas.
Did you park behind the goals though? That was my big mistake.
I was the last car sort of along the flank where it was starting to get pretty muddy. So I wasn't behind the goals. You never park behind the goals anyway, because your windscreen gets smashed.
It's stupid. Can I just read out some of the replies to Al Armstrong's tweet with me getting bogged out? Because I can't believe
credit to Al for putting the tweet out.
Yeah, credit
there.
To Al. I can't believe... Yeah.
This was on the official VAFA broadcast as well.
It was.
They panned over to you, ignoring the game.
Here we go.
The real important story.
So this is the sort of abuse I get on Twitter for driving a Toyota Corolla. It's hardly an outlandish sort of Elton John type vehicle. This is Elton John drives outlandish vehicles.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Matthew Kennedy, as compared to the normal abuse, make sure you
wash your mum's car before you take it home. Nice car, Tom Morris. Make them for men. Why am I surprised that Tom drives a car like that? Who parks on a hill like that in the wet? # rookie era.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. What's this one?
I didn't know cars were so gendered, to be honest.
Well, yeah, neither did I.
This is very odd.
Anyway, there's one more one that I want to read, but I can't find it anyway.
That's okay.
It's just ridiculous. Ha ha, loser.
Well, that could have been around anything.
It's all fair enough. Anyway, let's move on and talk about some footy.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing some deep, dark secrets that you've been holding over the weekend, Tom, and how it really affected you. But you were on fire last night on the couch. Two great stories. One that I think really reverberated around the footy community was your expose on the score review.
Yes.
Yes. Tell us, I suppose, and for the full story, click through to foxfooty.com.au, but this AFL insider that you spoke to anonymously was quite critical of the AFL in terms of how it is managing score reviewers at the moment.
Yeah, there's a few elements to this, and it seems to have resonated especially with Jared Waitley. And I did enjoy some of the tweets I got that said,
Jared's going to love this.
Yeah, Jared's going to love this. And yes. Jared was on radio this morning saying he sat up upright in his chair watching on the couch last night when we were talking about this story, because he loves the score, hates the score review, loves talking about the score review. But the main elements are these, and that is that in Victoria, you have six score reviewers. Four of them are AFL staffers. All the other score reviewers around the country are goal umpires, or ex-goal umpires. Mm. And what this means is that these AFL staffers, as well-intentioned as they are and as intelligent as they may be,
they're full-time employees of the AFL.
Full-time employees of the AFL and the footy ops department and things like that. Sure. And I chose not to name them because they shouldn't be in the public eye. These guys are working behind the scenes, often quite young, not on great money,
yeah.
And they're just doing their job. They're trying to do their job.
Yep.
But what's it's not as... There's a misconception that it's as simple as sitting, looking at vision and making a call. It's actually a little bit more complex than that, because you've got to, there's umpires' calls you've got to revert back to. You've got to pick out the right vision. You've got to have techniques such as, can you see a shadow on the ball?
Mm.
Can you see the finger? It is simplish, but it's not completely simple. And these people, these four non-goal, ex-goal umpires, are the ones that are making the mistakes.
So to me, there's a couple of elements to this. And what I found really interesting about your story is just the detail that we got about the actual process that we didn't know. I mean, Jared's been very strong on that this process doesn't work. It needs to be shut down for the rest of the season. I've thought for a little while, well, we still need to have something for the howlers. But you look at what this actually does. So these reviewers have 22 seconds to make a decision. And if they are not trained, it's not just about knowledge of the game by being a goal umpire.
Yeah.
It's about your knowledge of the technology. So you have to know, like, all right, I've got all these feeds. Which are the best angles? I have to pull them up, make sure I check this, make sure I check that. And the second one is the pay element as well, which was $250 a week.
Yeah, $250 a game.
Yeah, so which is not a lot. And these people are under a huge amount of pressure and doing more than just score reviewing as well during the game.
Yeah, they're doing match review panel stuff. They're cutting up. So, for example, with the Callum Sinclair concussion, which you remember from Friday night.
It caused himself a sort of concussion.
It was never, ever going to be a match review issue, was it? But
no.
The score reviewer has to cut that up in between assessing goals and behinds consistently. Now, there's a score reviewer. There's an assistant score reviewer these days. There's the reserve goal umpire and there's the technical guy who's employed by Hawkeye. It's a debacle. And I don't agree with Jared Waitley that you should shut the system down. I think it's still, the good still outweighs the bad. But from a reputational perspective, the bad is extremely bad.
Yeah, it doesn't look great on paper. And I agree with you as well that the resources need to be boosted. And I've thought that for a couple of weeks now, that this system has potential. But ultimately, as Jared says, the least qualified person is in the most important seat.
That's right. So people think the bunker is the panacea. I think the bunker helps, but you still need qualified people sitting behind a TV screen, picking the right vision, which is available to them, and having the time to do so. Now, the AFL will argue they've got more than 22 seconds. Yes, they do have more than 22 seconds if they want to, but sometimes you don't know if you need more than 22 seconds, because you don't know what vision to look at in order to make that decision. So it's not just a matter of looking at an incident and going, I need 35 seconds here. If you think you've got it conclusively, but you don't, then you're fine after 15 seconds. And that's the crux of the issue.
Well, the other big story that you broke on the couch last night, as I mentioned off the top, is one of the more extraordinary trade stories, certainly of the year so far, and almost in recent memory. The talk around a player, an Essendon player that has yet to play an AFL game, yet is commanding a contract upwards of $1.7 million over 4 years. So we're talking about Sam Draper of Essendon. Draper, I'll let you explain the story and the mechanics a little bit more, but for a player that is commanding that cash, and the average AFL player wage is $390,000 around there. So when Draper is commanding that cash and that security, it's quite a bizarre offer that's been put in front of him.
Who was the last famous Australian Draper, Max?
Was he thinking tennis, perhaps?
Tennis and golf.
Oh, yes, okay.
Scott Draper. He was a dual sportsman. He played tennis, Australian Open tennis, yes, and Australian Open golf in consecutive weeks, I think, or certainly in the same month.
Is this going back to your Facebook page of obscure Australian sports people?
Yeah, obscure Australian sports person, yeah. Sam Draper is a talented player. He didn't play any footy at all, I think, until February 2016. He was a soccer player.
Julian De Stoop, a mad Essendon fan, and it knows his footy inside out, really rates Sam Draper. And you mentioned on the couch last night, said he would have played by now if it wasn't for an ACL issue.
That's right. So
I think he was going to play the week he tore his ACL in the VFL in a curtain.
That's right. Yeah, May the 5th, I think it was. It was Sunday, May the 5th against Geelong.
May the 5th be with you.
Yeah, I don't...
doesn't make sense.
I don't agree with a lot of the criticism St Kilda have copped for this, because they've got money to spend. And I think while you have money to spend, you pick your targets. Now, who are we to say that this is the wrong target? He's a young player who's... 21?
Yeah, 21, I believe.
Yeah, and 21 by the start of next season, I think. And who are we to say that he's not the right target? Now, to get a player out of a club that's rated, you've got to pay overs.
So Essendon isn't going to pay this?
Essendon's not paying him $450,000 a year.
They are going to offer him something that fits into their pay structure, but certainly not this much.
And they want to keep him.
It's the fee that you have to get get him.
So I'm all about clubs going after players. The main issue I have with this is not what they've got to give up in a trade or what they've got to give up financially. It's are they able to get a ruckman who's coming off an ACL playing good footy within 2 or 3 years? That's a difficult task, especially one who hasn't played any AFL footy before at all. So the ACL injury is the big asterisk for me, not the money or the length of contract or the trade.
Yeah, when you're giving someone 4 years when you don't know if their knees are right yet.
That's right. That's, and they've had mistakes in the past. Nathan Freeman... they gave up a second-round pick for Nathan Freeman, St Kilda, and I know that he was a number 10 draft pick. I think he was a couple of years before that, but that didn't work, and they ended up delisting him. People were arguing Jake Carlisle's been a great pickup, and while he's been playing, he's been a great pickup. But he missed the first year through no fault of St Kilda's because of the Essendon ban. He's missed a big chunk of this year with a back injury. Yes, he's an important player, but is he worth giving up? I think they gave up pick 6 for him, or pick 7, St Kilda.
Something very strong.
And I think they got Darcy Parrish with that, which is a different story altogether. But I just feel like they've made some mistakes in the past, St Kilda, getting half-injured players, trying to play money ball, and they've got to be careful what they do here. This is a massive, massive contract now that's out in the open, and Sam Draper's an ACL injured victim, and he can't do anything.
And there's also the question of whether a ruckman is the right target. Rowan Marshall's shown some things this year. They haven't had a great ruck situation, and I think the rest of their rucks are actually out of contract.
They are.
So they're going to need someone.
Billy Longa, I think, will probably be delisted, unfortunately for him. He's spent the year in the VFL and hasn't exactly lit it up, even though he was a top 12 pick a few years ago to the Brisbane Lions. And Lewis Pearce has had concussion issues. Now, Lewis Pearce is talented. He can move, and he's been okay when he's played, but in the end, he's been on the list for 6 or 7 years, and how long can you give a ruckman to develop?
And Ralphie's reported last night that he's still suffering concussion symptoms from what he had about a month ago, which isn't great signs for him.
Yeah. Are we going to talk about St Kilda at all?
Yeah, I was going to ask, who is under more pressure at the moment, Alan Richardson or John Worsfold? Two coaches that are, well, Richardson's contracted until the end of this year.
Yeah.
Worsfold until the end of next year.
I think Worsfold's another 2 years after that, isn't he?
No, I think Worsfold's just until the end of next year.
Okay.
I stand to be corrected.
Both 6 and 7, of course, which is a relevant factor for St Kilda in particular, because that's much better than people would have expected them to be.
That's right. Richo's under more pressure because his sacking is more immediate than John Worsfold.
Mm.
I think that's pretty clear cut, don't you, Max?
I would think so. I mean, the question is expectations management. Yeah. And Essendon's expectations were a lot higher than St Kilda's were, even though Richardson did have the trigger in his contract that would give him an extra year if they won a final. Obviously, that was set a while ago. That wasn't set leading into 2019. That wasn't St Kilda's expectation.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a difference in the discourse that people are having between whether St Kilda's 6 and 7, they're going okay, and then their actual form. To me, 6 and 7 is a complete mirage. I understand it's a win-loss business and all of that.
Yeah.
But you can't carry over 6 wins from 1 year to the next. That doesn't mean you're going to be good. What means St Kilda's not going to be good next year, probably, is their percentage, which is a bottom four percentage.
Yeah.
That says they're a bottom four team. They've beaten Gold Coast narrowly twice. They caught Essendon at a perfect time in round two. They've had a couple of close games in their other wins as well. So it's not like they've had a great run to 6 and 7. So to me, Richardson has not shown that he has developed this group enough.
Despite the injuries?
even despite the injuries to me. And what Simon Lethlean came out and said on radio on the weekend, which was very bold and strong from him, and I appreciated the Saints being so straightforward on all of this, was that they wanted to see more improvement. So my question is twofold. How much more improvement do you need? Do you need 9 or 10 wins? And also, have they improved?
Well, he's probably a dead man walking. And Simon Lethlean's comments conditioned us to the move that will be made at the end of the year, I think. I think they should give him to the end of the year. I know I've been brutal with Brendan Bolton in the past, but they've had so many injuries. And if you look back at Richardson's tenure, 2014, they were at the absolute bottom. They won three of their first five games and then one more for the rest of the year, which was against Freo, which was a terrific win at Marvel Stadium. And then 2015, they were slightly better, but still not great. 2016 and 17, they actually were contending for finals beyond where we thought they were going to be at. 2018, if Richo gets sacked, will be the year that gets him sacked. It won't be this year. It'll be last year.
So Nick Riewoldt on SEN on Monday said that 10 wins was the number that Richardson needed to get to. But is the number irrelevant? Is it too sort of focused on 2018 too much for his future?
I think it's very harsh on him. But I think Simon Lethlean's comments pretty much make the number irrelevant unless they win a final.
Is it 10 wins depending on who they beat if they knock off a couple of finals teams?
Yeah, a couple of finals teams would help. But I saw some stats today. I think Jay Clark might have tweeted them that they haven't beaten many teams above them at all over the past 2 or 3 years. They've just beat teams below them. And that's where they're at. They're a mid-ranked team at best.
At absolute best. And realistically, is Richardson going to be the coach of the next St Kilda finals team?
No. Probably not, but he almost was 2 years ago, and he almost was the year before that.
Yeah,
he almost was in 2016 and 17. But they probably should have played finals in 2017. They probably made a mistake, looking back on it, in moving both Nick Riewoldt and Lee Montagna on in the same year.
Okay.
And I know they both retired. They gave Lee Montagna options, and Nick Riewoldt in the end decided to retire. But let's not beat around the bush. They pushed them both out. They wanted them both to move on. They thought they were ready to go. They weren't ready to go. They had to keep hold of at least one of them. They didn't. Even if they were going to be less than influential on the field, they had to keep hold of one of them. And I reckon it really hurt them last year. And that's what could get Richo sacked.
As for Essendon, the other 6-7 team that's sort of being debated now with John Worsfold's situation, again, injuries playing a factor. And I feel like for the second straight year, a slow start has doomed them. They're going to need to win 6 of their last 9 minimum to make the 8, which is going to be quite tough.
I think Richo is more the man to take St Kilda forward than Worsfold is to take Essendon forward. Well, I think taking Essendon forward is making them a top 4 club. And that's, I don't think Worsfold can do that. I think Richardson, if he was given the opportunity, not that he should, but if he was given the opportunity, could take St Kilda to finals.
Would you feel more comfortable right now if you were running both clubs, giving Richo a 4-year deal over Worsfold a 4-year deal?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah,
which doesn't mean I'd feel comfortable about it.
No,
but I'd feel more comfortable with St Kilda than I am with Essendon. I think Worsfold is, unfortunately, and you listen to Matthew Lloyd and you listen to the ex greats of the club, and you can just tell that the jungle drums are beating very loudly. Where do they play? Windy Hill.
At the Hangar.
The Hangar.
And they have, of course, the issue of a louder supporter base that is going to be calling for his
They're
head.
They're impatient.
Yes.
They should be better than they are. They absolutely should be better than they
are. Yeah, and the impatience comes from a finals win drought that's goes back to 2004, which they're starting to get pretty restless about, the Essendon folk. It's now time for Australia's favourite segment, and we did find some excellent audio during the week to actually use as a bit of a stinger for this as well.
Was that dangerous by Sebastian Vettel?
Fast.
5 second time penalty.
So tell me what that was.
So that's Lachie Hume doing a Fox Sports Formula One advert, which for some reason leads on fair or fast.
Not fair or fast.
No, definitely fast, because he was talking about the Sebastian Vettel-Lewis Hamilton incident in Canada.
So they've stolen fair or fast on a Formula One ad for Fox Sports.
I don't know that you copyrighted it. So
that is disgraceful.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, fair or fast?
Fair or fast. Max,
hi.
Now this is the first ever fair or fast question, which also doubles as a question. Now I found a technicality in how to do this, so here we go.
Oh, have you found a new punctuation mark?
Fair or fast? Who are we to judge how much the Saints should pay a player who hasn't played a game? Fair or fast?
Okay, I see what you mean about the statement.
Yeah, it's a statement question.
Who are we to judge the Saints over how much a player? No, I understand that. I think that's reasonably fair because. Yeah. As we said, when you look at St Kilda's position, when you have enough money, you need to spend it somewhere. So if you're paying a little bit over the odds for a player who you think could be a long-term ruckman on a four-year deal, I can see that. And obviously the risk of it failing is reasonably high. We know rucks take a while to develop, but if he's as good as people think he was based on his VFL form, Draper could be quite good for them, and they do have an issue there. So I'm not completely against it, and obviously the $1.7 million is a nice, sexy headline, but over 4 years doesn't make it seem quite as bad.
You made that headline.
Yes. I'm a sexy headline writer.
Yeah.
That's what they call me.
Interesting when someone calls themselves sexy, Ben.
Yes.
Fair or farce? Playing a game for home and away points in California is a good idea.
No, I think it's a farce. I might be a bit of a party pooper here, but
California's a fun place to go on a holiday.
I understand that, last Tom, year. But I'm looking at the China experience. And I don't know, China and the States would be a totally different, I suppose, adventure for the AFL. And they have played games in the US before, but I think are they going to try and do an international rule series over in New York or Boston around that? So that's probably the first thing on the agenda. It's a GWS-driven thing, according to our former colleague, Jake Nile. And great story
by
Jake.
They've got strong backers in California.
Yeah.
And that's how the Giants Stadium is called Giants Stadium, because those people in California are paying for it.
That all makes sense, but just from the aesthetics and how New Zealand didn't really work and how China has got lots of cash behind it and it's doing great things for Port Adelaide, but just to see the empty stands and the lack of interest around there, I'd say farce at the moment.
I still believe New Zealand can work if they go to Auckland. Bigger population, bigger sporting hub, if they just need the right stadia to do so, St Kilda.
It's also a sporting market that makes a bit more sense than breaking into the US. And also the question of why GWS is doing this. I understand that it's because of the financial backing, and this may be another way for them to give some money to the club. They did so with the Giants Stadium naming rights, but GWS needs to build a crowd in GWS. they're not getting people to the ground there.
Get your own backyard right.
Exactly, before you're trying to play games at UCLA.
Yeah.
As lovely and sunny as that would be in July.
Now let's stay overseas. Max. Oh. Gillon McLachlan was wrong to go to Hawaii mid-season.
This is a farce. This story is the silliest little beat-up that it could possibly be.
I enjoy when journos have a go at another journos.
I'm not having a go at other journos.
You and Mick Warner.
No, this is part of the way that, you know, you can do. There's no winning for a media organisation doing pro AFL stories. You know, that's not what people want to say right now. And Gil having a pre-booked holiday, as he did last year, he went to the Tour de France, I believe. It happened to be at a difficult time. He still did stuff while he was in Hawaii. He did a radio interview, which had its issues, talking about the bald-headed flog person running across two bays. Yeah. He did that from Hawaii. So he can still clearly do his job. They have the internet there, I've heard.
As they do. As Mick Warner said, it wasn't that he went to Hawaii is why he wrote the story. It's that he believes the AFL tried to cover it up that he went to Hawaii.
Why would you need to cover it up?
Well, I don't know.
Is it just all about the optics?
Did they cover it up? I didn't know about it. I mean, did you know that Gil McLachlan was away on a holiday?
Only until Gil reported it. But
he hit a 50th.
Does it need? 60th. Yeah. Does the AFL need to be totally transparent about that? And like, are they required to be transparent to the fans and custodians?
No, I think in
mid-season break,
the modern day world of globalization, you can pretty much do most jobs from anywhere. Now, Gil's got to front the media, and he did front the media on the Tuesday, I think it was, last week.
Yeah, big presser.
But
How did you think he went, by the way? There's been some real mixed reactions.
I thought he was reasonable. I thought he was a pass mark, but the sort of pass mark you don't tell your parents about at school.
Right.
Sort of a 6 out of 10. It's like, yeah, I passed.
Right.
I'm going to move on to year 11. Yeah.
You know about that, Tom.
I do know about that. Okay, yeah, good. Absolutely. Sometimes you don't really try and just get yourself a 60 out of 100, and that's it. but I don't think the AFL was required to tell us.
No.
Yeah, but it was an interesting discussion point anyway. Ben.
I should have camped out front of his house more. I'm sorry, guys.
You should have. Ben, Geelong have a serious and legitimate and long-standing problem post-bye.
Yeah, well, it's factually correct that that's fair.
So fair, yep.
Yes, that is a fair statement from you. And Chris Scott addressed this on AFL 360 last night in particular, saying that they need to tweak or have a look at their preparation coming off a bye. But I also vaguely remember him saying something similar this time last year or 2 years ago as well. So it is a long-standing issue when Chris Scott is backing over similar comments. And I think even the even bigger issue is that they also struggle in the first week of finals. Mm. And that their only victory in finals after a bye was actually after the siren when Isaac Smith missed in that qualifying final against Hawthorn. So there is undoubtedly an issue there and something that needs to be addressed.
Over the course of 6 or 7 years or however long it's been after buys that they've lost, Max.
Eight now.
8 years. sometimes it's probably because of the preparation, but it's hard to put a finger on exactly why they lost to Port, but it could be the Port were just fired up and better on the night and had nothing to do with the bye.
And Geelong's had an issue with slow starts and slow patches of games for a while. And that's another thing Chris Scott brought up. And they lost the first 10 clearances on Saturday night. So that was clearly Port coming to play. And they always do in this really aggressive style against the Cats anyway.
Yep.
So I think that was a big part of it. But I looked back at these 8 losses that they've had after home and away byes. 5 of those games were interstate games. So they're games the Cats are more likely to lose anyway. Yeah. And also, people have done research into byes in the AFL for a while now, and overall there is minimal to no impact on team form with the bye.
Yeah, right.
It just doesn't matter. It so happens that the Cats are 0-8. I think there's a team that's 6-1. It's the same sort of situation where you have your good performers, your bad performers. There are outliers either way.
But is it a case of if it keeps happening to the same club?
Like, the pattern's not good.
Is that more than coincidence?
I think we as humans like to find patterns. I think there's something to Geelong's issues in terms of the slow starts and things like that. And if they've happened in those games, so be it. But I also don't think that this is going to be some sort of issue that's going to crush their season. I think if they finish on top, as appears likely, I wouldn't be picking them to lose in the first week of finals because of the bye.
Based on this. Although I did cross my mind when I tipped Port Adelaide over Geelong on Saturday night as well.
Now, can you please mention the tips you also got wrong this weekend?
I got 3 this week. 3 out of 6.
So you did
a really bad week. Well, I've tipped Hawthorn 2 weeks in a row now, and I thought, sure, I think the Hawks will lift against the Swans. They didn't.
No. Nope.
They were terrible in that second half. And then I tipped Freo against Melbourne, which I think Freo were favourites. And what was the other one I got wrong?
I believe you tipped St Kilda.
I tipped St Kilda against Brisbane, which was embarrassing because that third quarter was sort of traffic cone sort of stuff.
Real putrid.
Yeah, so I got 3. So I don't know where I am now, but...
Which is strange to me because you were leading the Fox Footy tipping comp and yet you're tipping like you're 10 games back.
No. I tip who I think's going to win. That's my only technique. I don't take risks. I tip who I think's going to win.
Didn't you come up with a theory last year? The rebound effect? Was that what it was called?
It's actually called the rebound guideline.
Oh, rebound guideline.
I redefine it as the year goes on. It's just a guideline now. And that's what I sort of banked on that for Hawthorn defeating Sydney after a really poor performance at Marvel the week before against North Melbourne. Who have they played at Marvel? It was a Friday night game.
Essendon.
Yeah, they really struggled. So I thought they'll rebound. They didn't. And maybe Hawthorn just aren't that good. One more fair or farce. Max, to you.
Hi.
Dicko was talking in fact and knowledge rather than opinion and hearsay about Clarko leaving Hawthorn.
I like this one.
Well, it's just farce. It's just he wasn't. He
was, how do you know?
Because he said, I reckon. Not in a
so where does I reckon sit on the spectrum of opinion versus fact?
So there's I know, there's I believe, that's below that, slower to closer to opinion.
I understand.
I can reveal.
I can tell you.
I've been told. These are all journalistic cliches.
I think.
Then there's probably I reckon. And then there's probably, I don't know, maybe. Like that.
Yeah, okay.
So I think it was lower on the spectrum than people thought. And, you know, it became a thing because he has links to Hawthorn. If that's someone who has played 200 games at a different club, I don't think that becomes as big of a deal.
Well, I don't think I'm breaking any confidences here when he was saying the same things off air at Fox Footy on Saturday, according to Jared Healy and Dwayne Russell. I think he's got some sort of intel, Ben Dixon. I don't know what it is. I don't know if he's reading between the lines or whether he's being told things, but I don't think this is a complete stab in the dark. It might be a bit of a leap of faith, but I'm not sure it's a complete random stab in the dark.
Do you think it would not be extraordinary if Alistair Clarkson a week ago comes out in AFL 360 and says, I will never break a promise, a commitment I've made to Hawthorn. Never. That is so strong.
He was categoric.
And if he does that and then leaves, what sort of... he's obviously created quite a bit of goodwill at that club.
The only way Alistair Clarkson leaves is if the club also wants him to leave. And it's a mutual decision, a la Josh Shackey, when both parties came out, obviously on a lower scale, and said he's not going anywhere, and they ended up going because both then agreed that he was going. That's the only way it can happen.
In a sense, a la several Hawthorn players who have left the club, like Jordan Lewis and Luke Hodge.
That's the other thing about modern-day footy. There's too many supposed mutual decisions. It's such a load of crap. 1 in 100 decisions is properly mutual. It's like a mutual breakup. Someone's got to bring it up first, and then it's not mutual.
Great work from you, Thomas. As always, that has been Fair or Fast with the new stinger as well. Great work from you, Maxie, bringing in for Fair or Fast. Now, Tom was on fire on Monday night. Maxie, you were on fire on Sunday night because that meant it was the return of the time-honoured and annual Run Home article, which you put a mountain of work into. And the biggest one is always getting the first one out there, because we're now looking 8 rounds ahead from round 15 ahead of round 23. When you crunched the numbers and you looked at the fixtures, what were some of the biggest things to come out of the Run Home, which you can now read on foxfooty.com.au?
Yeah, and I will say one thing I've changed. In past years, I've tried to tip every game. And the problem with that is I don't get 9 every week, so I'm going to have some issues. So I've gone from a bit more mathematical of a method, and I think this is going to end up being more accurate. For mine, Geelong is a clear minor premier favourite. I think they're probably going to win 17 or 18 games, which is still them dropping 2 or more in the last 9. So I think that's entirely reasonable. And if you look at the top 4, it seems to me it's between GWS, Collingwood and West Coast. And I find it hard to believe that anyone else can make it, because Adelaide is 5th right now, a game back of the Eagles. But the Eagles have a very kind run home. I think it's very likely that they get to 15 wins. And a lot of those teams, GWS and Collingwood and West Coast, play each other. So those games are probably going to be what ends up deciding who finishes 2nd, 3rd, 4th, which will be very interesting.
Who's the best team in at the moment, Max?
In the comp?
Yeah.
Geelong.
And who, if you're going to pick a team that they struggle against the most in a grand final situation, who would that be?
Well, I would Sydney, based on their historic record. Yeah. I don't think that's going to matter quite as much.
No.
GWS won at GMHBA earlier this year, so I think that could be a problem for them if they do encounter them. Collingwood has been some interesting games.
Is there clearly a top 4, though? And then daylight, do you think, at the moment?
There's two different things here. There's a top 4 in terms of how many games I think teams are going to win. Yeah. I think West Coast, GWS and Collingwood all win 15
that's
or more.
That's the latter then.
Yes. But I don't think West Coast is in the top 4 based on form. They've had 2 really good weeks. The Dogs win, and on the weekend as well against Essendon. But other than that, I'm yet to be convinced by them. And their percentage shows that. They're quite a far bit behind those other teams. So they're probably more likely to finish 4th because of it. So I think they're closer to the chasing pack. It's just that West Coast, I'll bring up their fixture now and show you what they've got. So here we are. They've got the 3rd easiest, I've judged, of the entire AFL. Hawthorn at the G, Fremantle in the Derby, of course. Collingwood over there, so that's a big thing to get Collingwood at Optus. Melbourne in the NT, North Melbourne over there, Carlton at Marvel, Adelaide over there, Richmond at the G, Hawthorn over there. So
that's quite cushy as far as fixtures go, especially for a team that finished towards the top last year, at the top last year.
Wouldn't you say they're favoured in almost all of those? Even Richmond at the MCG in round 22, that team's going to be better, but they're going to be close to favourite in that.
As well, Ben.
It's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. And the other race for me is, I think there are 9 teams that can make the 8, and there's every chance that Richmond finishes 9th because of their percentage.
Not as funny anymore because they won a flag in the interim.
They sort of ruined the 9th-man thing a little bit. But I think it's because of their percentage. Their percentage is so bad. I think it's 92 right now.
Yeah.
So if they finish on a tie for 12 wins, as I've got 3 teams doing, Brisbane, Richmond, Port and Freo, they would finish 9th of those.
Tigers fans might disagree, Ben. I'm not sure what you say, but I think the Tigers are better off missing the 8 this year. They're not going to win the flag.
Right.
They're actually better off getting another month of preseason, getting everything in in terms of operations to their players and preparing for 2020 in a similar way to what Melbourne are. Just don't put the queue in the rack, obviously. Don't tank, but just ease into the final stretch of the season, and we'll see you in 2020.
Because if they did get into the finals anyway, they would be limping in there, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Or their players would...
The club would never say this. The fans want them to play finals, but I just think it's best sometimes for a club like Richmond that will be challenging next year to just not try to miss out. I'm not saying try to miss out, but just don't be too disappointed if you do miss out.
As the Swans start to accumulate wins, Maxie, there's just a little bit more momentum of a 2016-like run, or 2017-like run to the finals, keeps on gathering momentum. Where have you got the Swans finishing perhaps towards the end of the season, and are they realistically a chance of making the top 8? Because the last couple of weeks, they've been darn impressive.
So the problem is they're going to have to win 8 games, probably. 8 of 9, because they're at 5-8 right now. I've got them finishing 11th. I think they can get to 9 or 10 wins quite comfortably. But there's just a few too many tricky games left on their fixture. You've got Fremantle in Perth. You've got Geelong coming to the SCG. And it's that weird reverse thing with the Cats and Swans where they play better at each other's home grounds. The Giants at Giants Stadium, where that's probably the hardest team to play in the AFL right now, is GWS at their home ground. And then Port in Adelaide. So that's 4 games. That's a month of footy where the Swans would have to win 2, if not 3 games to make the 8. So it's probably going to be a bit tough. There's a few teams like that. North has shown some good signs, but they've got not the easiest run home as well, at the 3rd hardest. And then you've got teams compared, like Hawthorn. Hawthorn plays 7 top 8 teams in the next 9 and 5 top 4 teams, which makes no sense.
So then what is Clark? I mean, Clarko's the next question.
Yeah. And what he does and whether he does backtrack on that incredible statement. Before we look ahead to the cups and the tips, time-honored cups and tips on the Fox Footy podcast, let's dig into the Max's mailbag.
Max's mailbag?
Yes.
Is it now Max's mailbag?
Well, I mean, I get the questions and it's alliterative as well, which
is
helps.
Is it as controversial as Sam's mailbag was back in the day?
I wouldn't have thought.
No. You're a bit more left-wing than him.
A little bit. I'll have to check your spectrum for that.
Yep.
To see where I sit. Sometimes people just send their questions in. You know, I take little screen grabs of them to make sure I have them all. But one I have to point out here, got 3 likes. So clearly the commentariat want us to ask this question.
The masses like this question.
Steve, a good Geelong fan, asks, is it possible to drive a small white hatchback onto a wet and sloping grassed area next to a football oval without being bogged? I throw that over to you, Ben.
It's pretty difficult, it has to be said.
Well, from a sample size of 1, I'd have to say no.
You're not the only one to get bogged at local footy level.
With a small white hatchback at the back of Elsternwick Park, the answer is no.
It is.
Fair point. I'll take my medicine and move on.
How do you know that was about you? That's a bit presumptive to say that was about you.
Yeah, of course.
Lil has a question. Why is the mid-season draft not held during the mid-season bye?
Well, there's 3 weeks of mid-season bye. So
that's a fair point.
So what week is best to hold it in? I mean, if you had 1 mid-season bye week, then yes, hold it in that week. But at the moment...
And the AFLW Grand Final.
Well, yeah, you're big on that.
My campaign.
Yeah, I know you're big on that. I'm not sure about that. But
fine.
That's my opinion.
You hate women's sport. I
do not hate women's sport. Although Sam Kerr should have at least made the goalkeeper save the penalty. Did have a great World Cup though, but we should have done better. Should have made the quarters.
thank you, Matilda's expert,
thank
Tom
you.
Morris.
Waiting for Anna Harrington to get back in the office.
Oh dear.
What was I saying? So yes, there should be mid-season bye. No, I don't really care when it is, so long as it's around the middle of the season.
I also think part of the scheduling around this time was that we found out when it was. Didn't we find out during the season? Not thrown together, but it came together quite quickly.
I think the mid-season draft is actually going to be complemented by a mid-season trade period next year, I think. So it's never just going to be a standalone draft as it was this year.
Which will be interesting. Mal has a Collingwood selection question. Should the Pies have brought in Josh Dacos rather than experimenting with 3 talls?
I was just doing Collingwood's team tips for foxfooty.com.au, and it actually looks like Matty Schoenberg
had 33, didn't he?
Is a strong, not a strong chance. It's a 50-50 chance, I think, to come in. His chances, I think, are increased a little bit by Jeremy Howe going out, so it would be a reasonable like for like. So from that perspective, that might happen. But I think Nathan Buckley always said that he wanted to experiment with the 3 tools, Cox, Reed and Majacek, all on the same team. They all contributed, I think, on the scoreboard on Sunday. Collingwood's problems are deeper, I think, than, you know, whether Josh Dacos or Ben Reed plays at the moment. I'm staggered by how poorly they're playing in terms of around the footy and their contested ball numbers at the moment. Stuart Sidebottom, it's going under the radar that Stuart Sidebottom is well down on his usual output at the moment. Adam Treloar's racking up a lot of ball, but how damaging is it? Is it contested? And Scott Pendlebury's in and out of games. We've always known that Scott Pendlebury, a super consistent player for a decade, he's just a little bit inconsistent at the moment. That's what's concerning me a little bit about the Pies at the moment.
I'll tell you who else is a little bit down. I spoke to Champion Data yesterday. Joel Selwood. His last month has been pretty bad.
Well, he's been in and out of the midfield as well.
He has, but regardless of that, his player ratings are well down.
Right. Okay. That's a factor for them.
Chris Scott did say in his press conference that Selwood has been carrying a knee injury for a lot of the season as well. So I wonder...
Well, get him right then. Stop him playing and get him right for finals. Don't play him and make him limp towards September.
He's the kind of guy that just wants to play
tell him no,
isn't he?
You're not playing.
Yeah, I agree.
Sometimes you need to protect people from themselves. Callum Sinclair is a great example of that. He would have come back on and he was stumbling around like drunk Bambi, wasn't he?
Famous part of that movie, Drunk Bambi.
Yeah.
I recall.
If Bambi was ever drunk, yeah.
Wouldn't have thought.
Baby giraffe is what Josh Kennedy referred to it as.
Very good. Jason Little asks... You might have an answer for this, Tom. Are the Lions the most exciting team to watch? Not the best team, but the most exciting.
Well, Jason Little, I couldn't have phrased it better myself. You are a smart man. Do we have a prize for Jason Little? Do we have anything we can give him? Probably not.
No.
No, they are great to watch, the Lions. That third quarter was exhilarating. Yes, the St Kilda team was disgraceful, but the Lions, just the way they move the ball, the way they big O McInerney just sticks his arms up in the air and plucks everything. They're a breath of fresh air for the comp,
yeah.
The way they want to play as
they
well.
They needed that win as well, because you could sense in the lead up to this game, Chris Fagan was prickly in his press conference. Wasn't as much sort of good vibes, I think, just coming out of the lines in the lead up to this St Kilda game, because we mentioned last week that it was an unideal time to be playing the Saints at Marvel Stadium off a bye, but they delivered in that third quarter, which I think was would have been really, really pleasing for Chris Fagan and for all Lions fans.
Well, they were annoyed about the Carlton game, but they could also sense that they'd given it everything for round one of the AFL season, the JLT. They'd actually prepared to win JLT games.
Right.
So they'd been going for a long time, as opposed to other teams who looked to peak a bit later. They weren't taking any game that they played, practice games included, lightly. So by the time the bye came round, Chris Fagan admitted on air, I think, but also I've heard off the record from people at Brisbane that they were just cooked in the session before they played against Carlton, and Carlton ate them up after quarter time that day. And as a result, they looked pretty ordinary, but they refreshed, and they're a top eight team, Brisbane.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see them in finals.
I think they should make it as well, because they've still got...
Should they have a home final? Fifth or sixth?
They could do. They need to snag a few wins on the road. They've got four very winnable games at the Gabba. Melbourne, North, Bulldogs, and one more that I'm forgetting. They've also got Hawthorn down in Tassie.
Well, all games they play at the Gabba are winnable, regardless of opponent.
That's true.
Yeah.
The Collingwood game was the only bad game they've had there.
Yeah.
But it's getting into
That's a good Max's mailbag.
There's,
is there one more?
I believe there's one more. Will the Tigers finish in fourth? So that's Jamie asking...
Not Jamie Damon, is it? The media manager?
Optimistically hoping for... You were talking about Richmond's chances a little bit earlier. I think if they do make the eight, I think there's still a chance to go surprisingly far. But I definitely see your point about resting for 2020. If you're weighing up the percentages, they're a 2% chance of winning the flag this year.
Yeah.
But if they miss the finals, they're increasing their chances in winning it in 2020 to 15%.
I'm trying to be balanced when I say it. Don't lose on purpose.
No, don't
be too disappointed if you do miss out.
Good edition of Max's mailbag as always, and great sting from Tom Morris. The Round 15 tips and cups. We start on the Thursday night. I think it's the last Thursday night for the year. Essendon hosting the Giants. So a Thursday night game in Melbourne. Be interested to see how this is received. This is for the Kurt Ayllett Cup.
Who?
Yes. Played like two games for Essendon and one for the Giants.
Strong career.
So a reminder, the point is not to go, Dylan Scheel, because that's the obvious one. We want the people who you've never heard of.
Smith.
Yes.
Thank
you for imitating my voice. That's good.
This is a GWS Giants game for me.
They are playing in it, yeah.
No, I think they win.
Oh, sorry. I misunderstood. I need to see the Giants do well in an away game, because as I've brought up quite a few times in columns online and on here, they are an average team away from Giants Stadium. Their percentage is almost 100, bang on.
I feel like the Thursday night lights will actually contribute to them getting up for this one.
Okay.
I think this is a big game for the club. They don't get many primetime games at the moment.
And we're also not sure about Essendon still. Their defence had played well for a while and then suddenly allowed infinity scoring shots against West Coast. That's not ideal.
Geelong and Adelaide for my all-time favourite, the Ronnie Burns Cup.
Yes.
What a star. Long sleeve Ronnie Burns. In Geelong, is it?
Yes.
Geelong
for me.
Hawthorn and West Coast. This is for the Michael Colicker Cup for all those sort of early 2000s operators.
Xavier Ellis?
Xavier Ellis is very stiff.
You thought about it.
Very stiff. Colicker a little bit more left field.
Or Daniel Chick even.
Yes. Well,
the man with nine fingers.
Yes.
Where is this game?
This game is at the MCG.
If he has nine, does that mean he has an extra or one less?
You know what?
Because thumbs.
No, just fingers, mate. Phalanges. Sorry,
Dr. Morris.
Yeah, I am tipping West Coast because I'm sick of tipping Hawthorn. I tipped them the last 2 weeks and they've lost. So I can't just stick fat with a club that looks like they're going down the gurgler at the moment, which is amazing. We're saying that about them.
I'm tipping West Coast too. How well do you think Nick Nat plays returning at the MCG where he did his name?
I don't think he gets much of the ball or takes many marks, but I think he's pretty important in the hit out to advantage department.
Only going to be playing absolute maximum 75 minutes.
Yeah,
so
that's fine.
Tom Hickey will hold his spot. What happens with Tom Hickey after that remains to be seen. Swans and Suns at the SCG. Remember the corresponding game last year, the biggest upset of 2018. This is for the Nick Malcheski Cup.
Yes.
Swans win.
I would like to think the Swans are good enough to not get caught by the Suns 2 years in a row.
Collingwood and North Melbourne for the Saverio Rocca Cup.
Yeah, good one.
Very cultural of you there.
Collingwood?
Collingwood as well.
Port Adelaide and the Western Bulldogs for the Scott Bassett Cup.
At Port?
Yes, in Adelaide on a Saturday night, 5:03, I believe. Yep. Watch that one.
Port Adelaide.
I'm going to say that as well. The Dogs are so confusing. They have this exact same, confusing when they have the exact same issue every week of creating an incredible number of inside 50s and then having just a dysfunctional forward structure that allows them to not take advantage. They should have beaten the Pies.
They should have.
So they could win this game. I don't think they will, but they could.
Keep an eye on foxfooty.com.au later in the week because Julian De Stoop has got a Dogs column in mind as well, and he's a bit fired up about it, so keep an eye on that one. St Kilda and Richmond on Sunday afternoon. This is for the Dean Polo Cup.
Also Maddie's match. Donate online, mrv.com.
.org, perhaps.
.org, maybe. Just have a look at Maddie's rewilds.
Google. Just Google it.
Richmond.
Google it in.
Richmond. I'm sick of this. I know St Kilda might have a bit of a bounce back, but I think the Tigers will still be too good
for them. But Richmond's taking the longest road trip in footy from the MCG to Marvel. Keep that in mind.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a big...
You'll just walk.
That's the joke, Tom.
Yes, I know.
I would like to think Richmond again.
Brisbane and Melbourne. This is for the Joel McDonald Cup.
Yeah.
You can walk 4Ks.
Who are Melbourne playing against?
Brisbane. At the Gabba.
Oh, yeah, of course. You just said that. At the Gabba, or Brisbane win.
How much do you believe in Melbourne's little mini resurgence against Freo?
I believe it's a mini resurgence. Not enough to make them play finals, but enough to make them win a few more games for the year and sort of finish around 12th, 13th.
That was easily their best game for the season. That was the most they've looked like the team we expected them to be, partially because Tom McDonald looked like a footy player again.
And also Jack Viney looks like a man possessed again. He looks like he needs workload, Jack Viney. Mm. He reminds me of a young Jason Gillespie.
The Diz.
Gillespie was a superstar, but only when he had workload. When he first came back from injury, Gillespie, every time he bowled absolute powder puff. Like Viney, he's an influential player, but he's really only a very, very good player when he's played several games in a row to get himself back into the contest.
Always enjoyed the quick release of Jason Gillespie partnering at the other end of with Glenn McGrath. And then we conclude the round with Fremantle and Carlton at Optus Stadium for the Robbie Warnock Cup.
Freo.
Prestigious Freo.
Freo by lots.
Enough. Yes, I'm going to say 10 goals.
This is a classic rebound. What theory?
Rebound guideline.
Rebound guess. What, I don't know what it
for
is.
For Freo, you mean?
Yes, after the disappointing game against Melbourne.
Yeah.
And then Carlton, just, you know, impressive against the Western Bulldogs, but not quite getting there. I think the rebound effect might come back into play here, Tom.
Like all theorems, if you want it to be true, you can find a way for it to be so.
Spin it any way you want. And that's what we do best in the Fox Footy podcast. And keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.
Ding, ding.